And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Greg O. from Simi Valley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Greg Ortega. I'm an alcoholic.
I'd
like to thank Terry for inviting me out tonight, and thank all you guys for a nice, warm welcome. Good group. Feel good when I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, you guys are my people. Who would have thought? You know, we speak on a level and a depth that I don't always get out there, you know. A perfect example of that is my first year of sobriety, I had a job, which was a new thing. And I had made a friend on this job, this old guy named Mark, and when I left that job, he gave me a going-away present. It was my one-year anniversary in AA. I was going to a new job. This guy gives me a going-away present. It's nice. I unwrapped it, and it was this big, tall can of malt liquor. And I know that he knew that I was in AA. It was my first year. Tell everybody in your first year. Man, you couldn't take me anywhere. I'd be in line at the supermarket. Someone have a six pack in front of me. I go, oh, I used to drink a lot of that. But no more, I'm in AA. Take me to a restaurant, as soon as the waitress would come up, I'd go, no drinks for me. You don't have enough here. And she'd be like, sir, I'm just here to take your appetizer order. You know, simmer down, tiger. So I know that he knew that I was in AA, and I remember unwrapping that present, and I said, well, thank you, Mark, for the booze, but why? He said, well, Greg, I thought maybe you'd like to keep that in your window. It's a commemorative can. I said, well, thank you, Mark. I don't actually feel comfortable keeping the beer in my window, but thank you. And he said, well, take it out in the parking lot and pour out the beer, but save the can. I said, I'm not pouring out good beer now. I was worried about the beer at this point, and I told him, Mark, thank you so much. Honestly, I just can't accept your gift. And he said something very strange to me. He said, Greg, I know what you mean. He said, I used to be an alcoholic. I said, you did? What happened? He said, well, you know, I got older and got married, had some kids, and, you know, I stopped drinking. And I remember thinking, you know, I got married. You know, I had some kids. And I couldn't stop drinking. That's when I decided to throw some AA his way, right? I told him, I go, Mark, maybe you are a heavy or a hard drinker. I said, me, I'm an alcoholic, which means I have this obsession of the mind and allergy of the body, and I'm constantly thinking about drinking until I finally succumb to the desire. Then it sets off a phenomenon of craving, and the cycle is repeated over and over until I end up in freaking AA. And that's about the time you lose them. You know, their eyes glaze over. But when I say that to you guys, I get a room full of heads going, yep. You know? Oh, yeah. I'm with you. So, yeah, to me, that's the music of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always feel good when I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me give you some quick background. I hear a lot of people from the podium say how they didn't fit in. When they were younger, they felt like they didn't fit in with the crowd. Well, I'm an only child. I'm half Mexican, but I look white. And I think I was born this tall. And I went to 13 different schools in my first 11 grades, so I identify with that, not fitting in. Personally, I don't think that had anything to do with me becoming an alcoholic, but I do identify with it. And even when I had chances to fit in, I would blow it. I would. I'd be at a new school. They'd hear my name at roll call. Ortega. at the break, my homies would come up. Orale, Ortega, que quieres decir? I'd be like, how do? I went like that my whole life. We finally landed in Simi Valley. That's where I'm from. That's where I drove out from today. And in Simi Valley, my first day of school, I made a friend. I was 14. He invited me to the park after school. Huh? Go out to the park. He was like a popular guy. There was a bunch of people there. They all sat in a circle. We know, right? Apparently he was in the circle. So you might remember, I was sitting in the circle, which I thought was some weird Simi Valley tradition, right? All of a sudden, someone pulled out a bottle of Southern Comfort and started passing that around. Someone else lit up a joint and started passing that around. I'm not stupid. I saw what was going to happen. And I was not going to do it. Right up into the time when I did it. It's weird. I don't know if that's peer pressure or I don't know what it is, but all I know is that bottle went around a few times. I started to catch that buzz. And it was beautiful. Wonderful thing. I remember riding my bicycle home that day. The clouds were just, I've never seen clouds like that before. I remember thinking, you know, I've wasted 14 years of my life not doing this. And it's not going to happen anymore. And I immediately became, you know, the party guy from the 80s, remember? Some of you remember. I mean, I was drinking all the... I was the guy that could drink more than anybody else. Probably like a lot of people in here. Smoke the biggest bong load, do the biggest line. That was me. And I'll tell you, it was nothing but fun. Nothing but fun. It was some of the best times of my life. Back in the 80s, we used to go to a kegger party like every Friday or every Saturday night. And oh, we used to go to these heavy metal concerts. Iron Maiden rocks, dude. Those were the days. If it would have stayed just like that, you'd have a different speaker tonight. Unfortunately, this alcoholism thing is a progressive disease, right? That's what they tell me anyways. And what I've experienced is that it is. And it started getting worse. And I didn't notice it at first. I was really one of those clueless people. I mean, for years, I was clueless about what my problem was. I was convinced it was the cops in Simi hate me. That's why I get arrested all the time. And my boss is unmanageable. That's why I had to quit. I hear all the time how this is a disease of denial. I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. And I think there's a... I like the way the Big Book puts it. The Big Book doesn't use the word denial when describing the alcoholic's plight. It does not use the word denial. That's something that came from somewhere else. The Big Book uses words like self-deception, delusion. These are all much deeper than mere denial. I know what denial is. Done it 1,000 times. Mr. Ortega, did you break into those nice people's garage? No, Your Honor, I didn't. That's denial. I know I did it, but I lied. But self-deception is something much deeper than mere denial. Self-deception is hard to spot. Wouldn't be very deceptive if it was easy to spot, right? And you could have put me on a lie detector and asked me, Greg, do you think your drinking's a problem? And I would have said, no, it's those policemen who seen me. I would have passed. The needle would not have moved. I truly believed all this stuff. And as I'm going along in somewhere along the lines I crossed that line into alcoholism. I truly believe that I caught alcoholism through drinking. One of those weird ones. I don't think I was born an alcoholic. I don't think my parents had anything to do with it. I don't actually even think it had anything to do with my early personality traits. I really don't. I think I drank my way into alcoholism. And somewhere along the lines, those personality traits got twisted and turned into something that was very crazy. I got a good job when I was 18 at this big aerospace company. And it was an exciting time to work there. Space shuttles were flying off into the air. I was a part of all that. And over the next few years, I started having a little problem getting to work on, like Fridays and Mondays. Were tough, and they were getting ready to fire me for attendance, and someone came up to me and said, Greg, if you go to the personnel department and tell them you're an alcoholic, they'll wipe your slate clean and you can start over. I like that. I'm always looking for an angle. I don't know how they jumped to the alcoholic conclusion, but I'm willing to give it a shot. So I go up to the personnel lady and I was like, hey, I'm an alcoholic. And she was so nice. She was like, oh, honey. You poor thing. I was like, yeah. And she gives me this number to call. So I call the number. And next thing you know, I'm in a 30-day inpatient treatment program. Which sucks when you're 21, because 30 days is a lot of prime partying time. But it was a good job. I thought I'd stick it out. So I went to this treatment program, which was great. I mean, I learned a lot of stuff. Very educational. Very educational. Forget about it. I learned the difference between acute and chronic alcoholism. Right? The disease concept of alcoholism is another important one. Learned about my triggers. Huh? My boundaries. I found out much later a big trigger for me is like waking up. That consciousness thing is whew, so tough. And but, you know, I stuck it out, and I did what I was supposed to do, and I learned all that stuff. I could rattle off the first three. I went to my first AA meetings there. They had the H&I panels that came in, and I could rattle off the first three steps at a moment's notice. If you ask me, I could rattle them off. Yeah. I was elected patient representative, and which was a one week long term. I was elected to an unprecedented second term. I kind of liked it there. I gained some weight. And when you graduate this place, you graduate, which is fantastic. Because when you graduate, clearly you know everything you need to know to sally forth and be a good citizen, right? So when you graduate this place, they put you in the middle of the room, and everybody makes a circle. Don't laugh at this circle, okay? God was there. They make a circle. And then they get a medallion, and everybody, like, prays over it, and then they say something nice about you. I love that. They go like, Greg, we've seen a lot of growth out of you. I'm like, yeah. Thank you. Next person would come up and say, Greg, you're not the same person that came in here 30 days ago. I'm like, yeah, that's right. Finally, the counselor came up and said, Greg, I think you're here covering your ass for your job, and you're going to have a beer in your hand 15 minutes after you walk out of here. In front of everybody. I'm like, you dick! And I made a liar out of that guy. I had a beer in my hand 5 minutes after I walked out. been waiting 30 days, you know. And I truly just did not see it at that time. I really didn't. And shortly thereafter, I got married. Got married, had two beautiful kids, boy and a girl. Got my first DUI. Yeah. They send you to more school there. I was getting a lot of education. I got my second DUI. Then they send you to the never-ending school. I was an expert by this time. I could have taught the class if the counselor wanted to call in sick. Shortly thereafter, I had another job that they thought I should go to one of them treatment programs again. And I went, and I'm really starting to think people are really picking on me. This one was nice, though. It was really touchy-feely. Lots of hugging. I like that stuff. I do. We would be in group therapy like 5 hours a day. And we would check in before every session. We would check in like three different areas. We would check in physically, emotionally, and spiritually. We were fully checked in. And I had the same rap every time it would come to me. I'd go, "Hey, I'm Greg, physically healthy, mentally stable, and spiritually connected." Every time. Five times a day. Finally, one of the counselors called me in his office. He says, "Hey, Greg, spiritually connected Greg, I've been sober a number of years, and you're more spiritually connected than me. Can you explain that?" And I'm so out of it, I thought he was asking my advice. I thought he was seeking my counsel. So I was like, "You know, dude, you just got to look at life like a big bong hit. It needs to be shared with all your friends." And he's like, "You don't get it, do you? Idiot, you don't get it." And boy, I tell you, truer words were never spoken. I honestly did not get it. Honestly didn't. My drinking progressed over the next few years, and finally, after that second DUI, I was, you know, convinced that Simi Valley was the problem. So we decided to move, right? In AA, we call that doing a geographical, right? So we moved to Las Vegas. Made perfect sense at the time. I don't know. And boy, I tell you, my life really came apart in Las Vegas. We were there a year and a half, and just a lot of bad stuff. My life just came apart. Ended up getting a divorce. When we got a divorce, I moved back to Simi. I moved back to Simi. I brought my 4-year-old son with me. He was always a daddy's boy, and we moved back together. And I tell you, he became the most important thing in my life. Just, I wasn't one of those single fathers that would drop him off at the mom's house and go out. No, he was with me all the time, and we became really close. And something I got to tell you about me is I'm a big substituter. Okay, I would get that DUI, that problem with drinking, and I would stop. I would ramp up the meth use, but I would stop the drinking. And that would cause some, you know, hellacious problems. So shortly thereafter, I'd stop the meth and start on the vodka. And a funny thing was happening as I was doing these jumping back and forth. I was having less and less control each time. I thought I was doing the right thing. I would brag to my friends. I'd go, "Hey, look at you. And look at me. And look at you." Drinking caused me problems, so why stop? "Can you pass the crack pipe, please?" And I went through this thing back and forth, and things were getting worse and worse. And over the next 3 years, I got really bad. And what happened is I got arrested for a felony possession of narcotics. And before I got to court, I got another one.
They hate that out here.
They get all serious, you know. And And I actually had a number of charges, and I was looking at some years in prison. And my son was 7 now, and I just sent him up to for a visit with his mom. And I guess she had found out about my court problems, and she called me back like 3 days after he got up there, and she says, "Hey, Greg, listen, I know about your problems, and Damien's going to be living with me now." And she said, "Don't try anything, or I'll get custody of him. And you know I can do it now." And that was the one thing that could never happen. That was the one thing that was never going to happen. And I remember I asked her, I go, "Have you told him yet?" And she said, "No, I haven't told him." I go, "Could I talk to him?" And I got him on the phone, and I said, "Hey, you're going to have to stay with your mom for a little while." And as soon as I said it, that kid started howling and crying like he was in physical pain. And it was like a knife in my heart every time he did that. And I was going, "Look, it won't be long. It won't be that long." And he was like, "How long?" And I go, "I lied. I said maybe a year." And he was like, "I don't think I can handle it." I was like, "I can't handle it either." And every time he cried, it was just like a pounding in my skull, and I couldn't handle it anymore. I said, "Look, Daddy's got to go." And he said, "No, Daddy, don't hang up on me." I said, "No, Daddy's got to go, really. I got to go now." And I hung up on my son. And that was the most cowardly thing I had ever done in my life. It felt like that big. And I remember hanging up that phone going, I was in a room full of people. I said, "That's it. I'm stopping everything. You know, no more drinking, no more drugs. Everything stops now." And that most devastating event in my life also equaled my most feeble attempt at sobriety. And 20 minutes later, I had a drink in my hand. 20 minutes later. I think everybody in this room knows how I felt 20 minutes later when I picked up that drink. I felt like the biggest loser in the world, and there was nothing to live for. Really nothing. And someone asked me before the meeting what my bottom was. That was my bottom. I didn't stop, though. That was the most devastating event that ever happened in my life, and it wasn't enough to make me stop. Over the next 8 months, I did things I never thought I would do. I became an instant criminal. I was like instant criminal, and homeless, just it's like I didn't care anymore. And I remember sitting under this bridge. I was sitting under this bridge. It had been raining for like a week in Senior. I had a little dry spot that was getting smaller as the days went on. And under that bridge, I had a moment of clarity. And I just, everything was washed away, all my rationalizations and justifications. And I saw myself for exactly who and what I was. And it rocked me to my core. I saw that I was just an alcoholic that hurt anybody who ever got close to me. And I was a loser. And those were my good points. And rocked me to my very core. And even that wasn't enough to make me stop. I kind of resigned myself to, oh my God, this is what guys like me do. This is the kind of life guys like me get to live. And I think jail saved me. I got an extremely light sentence. I got them to drop that committing a felony while out on bail. That was a tough one, but they finally dropped it, and I got a real light sentence of 6 months. And I remember I went into that jail, and I immediately started going to all the meetings. I'd been to AA before, right? They send you when you get them DUIs. They send you with a card. I've been in the treatment for, I've been to AA. I had been to AA. I thought you all were a little bit dramatic. I definitely thought that I wasn't one of you. But, you know, even when I used to go to those meetings, I would go drunk. You know, you got to go properly sauced to a meeting, right? And but there was something there I wanted. I think it was the camaraderie. I really believe the fellowship was one of the first things that drew me in. And I remember they used to give out the chips. And one time I just thought, you know what, I'm going to take one of them 30-day chips. Got up and took a 30-day chip dunk. Everybody was so nice, too. They were like, "How'd you do it?" And in my home group, we have all the signs on the wall. So I said, "Well, you know, I just take it one day at a time." And I think, keep coming back. Thank you. And it felt good. I got the 90-day chip hug, and it was great. And felt so good, I went back the next week and took a 60-day chip. Not nearly as many people congratulated me on that one. But when I was in that jail and I went to those meetings, I don't know how to describe it other than I heard stuff with someone else's ears. You guys were talking and I was automatically connecting. And I finished my 4 months of what I had to do. I got out and I had an exit plan. I was going to go to that meeting that I used to go to and I was going to really try. And I left that jail my first day. I got on my bicycle. I had to ride a bicycle for my first 3 years of sobriety, going to any lengths. And I got on my bicycle, was riding to the meeting my first day out of jail, and I met my probation officer. He was mean. He was a mean guy. You wouldn't even talk to this guy until you were cuffed. You'd see him go, "Hey, Greg, how you doing?" Click, click. Doing pretty good until about 10 seconds ago, you know. And he told me, he goes, "Greg, I get all the no-hopers. You're a no-hoper." He said, "I expect to send you to jail. I just want you to know that, you know, right from the start." I go, "Well, thanks for endarkening me, you know." Thanks for that vote of confidence there, Skippy. And and that first day out, I met him, and he wanted to go search where I was going to live. And I was going to go live where all 34-year-old tough guys live, with Mom. So he goes and searches Mom's house and finds a gun. Mom had a gun. Who knew? And he pulls out this gun and goes, "Greg, that's a year right there, another year. There we go. I told you, it didn't take long, did it?" I was going, whoa, wait. This, I just got out. I mean, I was out hours. And I did some fast talking. He called my mom. She claimed it was hers. God bless her. And he said, "You know what, Greg, I'm going to let you off this time. I'm going to let you off. But I tell you, I've talked to the landlords. They hate you. And you're not to live here." And I was like, "Okay, well, thanks. Made me homeless, you know." So I went to that meeting, and still my home group today, Unity Hall in Simi Valley. And they got like 28 meetings a week there, right? So I went to all the meetings they had to offer that day. I went to the Nooner, the 6 o'clock, the 8:30, the late night, share till you puke meeting. I went to all of them. And after it's all over, you know, people start breaking up into little groups. You know how you guys are. And I'm just sitting there, you know, getting ready to jump on my bike, and finally it was just me and the secretary. He goes, "You're Greg, right?" I go, "Yeah, it's Greg." He said, "Well, what are you doing tonight?" I go, "Well, probably go home, go to bed." He goes, "Me too, see you later." And I didn't really have a home, so started riding my bicycle around Simi Valley, ended up in the hills, and back in the old days, I used to be able to sleep in the park, just right in the middle of the grass. You can't do that sober. It's weird. I tried. It was weird. So I'm riding my bike. I'm hoping I'm just going to get tired and be able to sleep. And when I was riding up in the hills in Simi, I saw something up in a tree. So I climb up in this tree. It's kind of weird. And there was a platform up in the tree. And when you kicked all the beer cans off, it was roomy. And it had like branch-to-branch carpeting. And I ended up just, you know, sitting there to take a rest. I ended up falling asleep, right? So I wake up the next day, brush the leaves out of my hair, and go back down to that meeting. Did the same thing. Went to all the meetings they had to offer that day, and same thing happened at the end of the night, and I was in the same position, and I'll tell you, I didn't ride that bicycle around nearly as long the second night as I did the first night. Ended up going back to that tree, which would become my home for the next 4 months. Now, I probably didn't have to live in a tree for 4 months. But I didn't want anybody to know that I was living in the tree. See? It was my secret. Instead, I would just get on the bike every morning and ride down to the meeting hall and tell you all how great sobriety was. But I was not feeling it, I'll tell you. Remember, when I got out of jail, I had 4 months of sobriety. For the next 4 months, I lived in a frickin' tree. And I saw people taking 30-day trips that seemed much more well-adjusted than I was. They would be like, this is sobriety rocks. I got a raise at work. I'm sleeping in the big bed. The dog's licking me again. I love it. I'm sitting there thinking, well, good for you. Follow me back to the tree tonight. See how grateful you are. And I'll tell you, I was not feeling it. And somewhere around my 9 months, I remember sitting in the back of the meeting where I always sat, in the back, so I could properly judge you. You know, I also got to tell you, I did not have a sponsor. I was working step none, right? And I was in the back of that meeting, and I just got that overwhelming feeling that I was going to drink again. And I'd been around long enough that the thought petrified me. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to drink again. I'm going to drink again soon. If that guy shares again, I'm drinking. And I had been around for a while, but I'd been doing nothing. I heard this one guy, he used to always share. He was one of those, he shared big book this and big book that. And, oh, come on, you know. I didn't like that kind of sharing when I was new. I like what I used to call sharing from the heart, which meant you cussed or cried. You know, that to me, then I thought you were sharing from the heart. And this guy was always sharing the solution and talking about the big book. But I was so petrified that one day that when I felt that, he was walking out the door and I just stopped him. I said, hey, Pat, I think I'm going to drink, man. I think I'm going to drink soon. Can you help me? And he said, sure. I tell you, over 8 months of not having a sponsor, you kind of build it up into something big. Right? I thought it was going to be much more something. And he just goes, yeah, sure. Come on over to my house tonight. And we started working the steps out of the book. He would read a paragraph to me sometimes and tell me how it affected him and what he felt when he did that. Then I would do it. And he made it seem so simple after that big mountain that I'd made over those last 8 months. He made it seem so simple. And I can't tell you exactly when it was in the steps, but somewhere along the lines, I remember waking up one morning thinking, you know what? I haven't thought about drinking for a while. Which was amazing to me. Because I had spent the last 20 years, you know, upon awakening, I planned my party day. Where was I going to party? How long was I going to party? How was I going to get away with more? And how was I going to steal yours? And that thought that I hadn't thought about drinking for a few days was amazing to me. And I told him about it. He goes, well, see, it works. It works if you work it. You know, it seems so simple. And because I had gotten confused. In those 8 months, I had gotten real confused in AA. If you're new here, I know there were some new people here tonight. And if you're brand new to AA, I just want to warn you, it's going to take you about 3 months just to learn the lingo, right? We talk funny here. I used to get pissed, now I get resentments, right? I used to count my blessings, now I make a gratitude list. And it was very confusing because there's like different stuff being said. We have a question and answer meeting at my home group where someone will ask a question and get 20 different answers. I was baffled. I would go to the tree at night and I'd say, these bastards are confusing me. I'm going to get through. I'd open up the book. I had a little flashlight on a wire hanger. They're not telling me. I'll get it out of the book. And I open the book and it says, half measures will avail us nothing. But you flip to another part and it says, but we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. Ha, 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 ha
I got a friend, Doug R., that tells a great story. I love it. He says, I came into my first meeting, an old-timer came up to me and said, you want to know the secret? I said, yes, I want to know the secret. He said, just hang on. Now, I can do that. I can just hang on. That's good. I went to the meeting the next night, and another old-timer says, hey, you want the key to sobriety? I said, yeah, I got the secret. If I have the key, I'll be good. Well, what's the key? He said, just let go. I totally identify with that. That's how I felt those first 8 months. And then my sponsor started taking me through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined in the book. And amazing things happened. I used to hate, when I was living in a tree, I would hate it when I'd go to speaker meetings and hear these speakers talk about how great their life was. So it drive me right up the wall. They'd say, I got a life today that I didn't think was possible. I was like, oh, God. Anyways, I have a life today that I didn't think was possible. For a guy like me, I honestly could never believe it. I got out of the tree. I started working. I got a job. I'm a machinist by trade. And all of a sudden, I had a friend that was an instructor, a teacher at the adult school, and she needed someone to help her teach Wednesday nights. I said, all right, I'll try it. So I fill out the application. Apparently, there's some kind of thing with the California Commission. Can't be a convicted felon, whatever. So that was a big problem. And the lady in singing told me not even to try. But I said, I'm going to give it a shot. Let's do it. And I filled out all the applications. You guys wrote a bunch of letters, and they commissioned me to become a teacher, which I've done for the last 5 years, part-time. It's my part-time job. I got a regular job. I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous to this girl I 13. I met in. No, that's not true. We did wait a year. Wasn't my choice, but we did. And this is the most wonderful girl in the world. She really is. This is a girl that would not have been. This is the type of girl that would not have been interested in me before. And we have a great marriage. We just had a baby girl 3 years ago. I got a 21-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 3-year-old. I was almost out of the woods. And a lot of things have happened over the last 11 years that I was sober. And I really honestly, not only did I think they could have happened, I wouldn't have thought I would have wanted them. If you would have asked me 11 years ago if I would have wanted the life that I have today, I would have said no. Who would want that? And imagine my surprise when I feel I've struck gold, I feel like I've struck gold here, and I like to share it with other people, and it's just, I have you guys and Alcoholics Anonymous to thank for that. So I'd like to leave you with this. It's an old saying someone told me a long time ago. I've always loved it, and it goes, be careful of your thoughts, for your thoughts become your words. Be careful of your words, for your words become your actions. Be careful of your actions, for your actions become your character. And be careful of your character, for your character becomes your destiny. I hope we all can walk this road of happy destiny together. Thank you.